standing at the end of it. None materialized before they reached Dr. Santos' office, but she still felt a breath of relief when they stepped inside. This was a familiar room. Here, with the dark wood and sparse windows, Cochin lit their lamp. "This way," he said, leading her to the back. They passed the front desk, closets, and examination rooms before they reached an oak door in the back. The painted letters on the frosted window spelled out a lustrous name, Santo Keyshawn. Cochin tried the handle, locked, but that was to their advantage. Dr. Santo had the only key into the office. Not even Cochin had been given one. So anything they left here would incriminate him, and him only. They'd chosen the end of the week for their break-in, so Dr. Santo wouldn't see his office before the investigators did. Mimi's words played in Yika's head. Leave nothing to question. They wouldn't. Yika squatted by the door and drew out a lockpick. She fiddled with the pins, finding them more numerous than the locks outside and with less tactile feedback. If only she could soothe metal, this wouldn't be so difficult. But she set to work one tumbler at a time. This should only take a few minutes. Cochin nodded, and she could feel his eyes watching her. For some reason, that made her sloppier. I'm glad you're here, he murmured, as though talking to himself. Actually, I'd love to see you handle these locks without me. Pin by pin, she jiggled the tumblers into place, until finally the lock slid free beneath her wrench. Straightening, she tried the handle again, and the door swung open with ease. There, she said, pocketing the picks. Not so hard. Cochin didn't say a word as he stepped into the study. It looked like such an unassuming place, just a blocky desk and laden shelves and an arched window at the far back where one could stand sentinel over the sprawl of the cat burrow. Yika had been in so many places she didn't belong lately. Dr. Santo's house, a dead man's body. But this felt the most innocuous of them all. As Cochin busied himself with planting the bottle, Yika found herself gravitating toward the desk, careful not to touch anything despite her gloves. It was sparse for such a renowned physician. The only things on it were a stack of papers, an inkwell, and another photo of his son. The boy was slightly older this time, an adolescent, hands folded patiently as his portrait was taken. A newspaper clipping had been stuck into the frame, its headline tragic. Heart transplant fails. Doctor mourns beloved son. Yika, Cochin said, calling her attention. He lifted a weathered folder that had been labeled with his own name. Look at this. It's everything Dr. Santo has against me. She took Cochin's side, looking at the folder's contents over his shoulder. It was as he'd said, a forged deportation warrant with Auntie Ye's name, a record of a patient who died with an autopsy report to suggest a blood carver, clandestine photographs of Cochin's bare-handed patient visits. All of it blackmail, all of it waiting to be spent. If not Cochin's mother, then something else. Because Dr. Santo never planned on letting his heart soothe go. By the mother, Cochin whispered before closing the file. It's more than I ever knew. We can shred it, she suggested, gesturing to the paper grinder in the back of the office, its mechanical lever jutting from its side. With a look of surety, Cochin picked the clips from the files and jammed the entire folder in the grinder. As he turned the handle, it ate up the folder with little discretion, shredding photos and chewing ink. With each shrinking inch, Yika felt her heart lift until the folder disappeared completely into the machine, nothing more than kindling. With the sanchoronium planted, Cochin extended a hand and, with an eager smile, Yika took it. They exited the room and closed the door, locking Dr. Santo's fate in behind it. Relief slid into place in Yika's chest, her heart finding a contented rhythm to match the sounds of Cochin's slow, cautious breaths. It's done, he said, as though the reality of it was just dawning on him. I'm free, she finished for him. Free, he echoed breathlessly, turning to her. His expression was dipped in hope and mired in doubt, but she laced her gloved fingers in his and squeezed. He squeezed back. "Cochin, I," she said, facing him in full. The space between them hung with words unspoken as he turned. "What?" His expression was expectant. Nika didn't know how to describe what they meant to each other. First strangers, then adversaries, then heart suits. Friendship had come somewhere along the way, and he'd kissed her on idyllic waters. But beyond that? Was there a word to encompass the feeling of seeing herself so completely in his eyes? Of being found when she'd resigned herself to waywardness? She realized there was. She just never had the certainty before to say it. With the enormity of their future unfurled before her, the promise of a life with another heart soothe, doubt yielded to faith, and Nika found the bravery to say, "Van Cochin, I love—" The click of a gun. They both startled, pulling apart. A shadow occupied the end of the hallway, the shining barrel of a pistol catching the glint of silver light. It aimed directly for Cochin's heart. The figure stepped forward into the moonlight, but Nika already knew who it was. The grim look on Cochin's face revealed that he did too. There, blocking the entrance with pistol in hand, was Dr. Santo. Gloves had never felt so damning before. Her hands burned, wishing to be free from the constraints of silk, to find a home around Dr. Santo's neck. Even then, he kept them at a distance. One meant for the speed of a bullet, but not a heart soothe, and he'd evidently come prepared. A scarf tied around his neck, sleeves tucked into his gloves, pants that kissed the ground. "Cochin," he said, his voice adopting the scolding drawl of a disappointed parent. "I thought you'd learned your lesson." Cochin edged forward, placing himself between Nika and the pistol. "Dr. Santo," he began, voice wary. "I've done as you asked. I killed Mr. Kongmi. You don't need me anymore." "Fair enough," Dr. Santo conceded, but the gun didn't lower. "However, do you remember what I said the last time you crossed me?" Cochin lifted his chin, eyes narrowed. Nika could tell he didn't want to afford Dr. Santo the satisfaction of an answer, but a jerk of the pistol coaxed it out of him. "You said that I wouldn't be so foolish as to do it again." "Right," Dr. Santo said, and spread his free hand. "Yet, here we are. And what's more, you've roped in another. Now, just who are you, Nika?" His imperative gaze turned to her, though the gun remained on Cochin. Where was that mentor-like glimmer behind his glasses, the kindness that had drawn her toward his lab in the first place? Where was the Dr. Santo who had made her feel as though she could be someone in high society, something more than a charade? The patience had been replaced with icy cunning, and the twinkle in his eye with the shine of a barrel. As disgust boiled its way up her throat, she realized the man she thought was Dr. Santo had never existed in the first place. "I'm nobody," she responded, her voice steady. She wondered if their advantage in numbers would be enough to best Dr. Santo, one to distract him and the other to remove a glove and carve. But the gun was level with Cochin's forehead, and an itching trigger finger was faster than a heart soothe.
"Certainly not a nobody, if Cochin has chosen to involve you. Is this some elaborate plan to collect evidence against me?"
"All I want is to leave," Cochin growled. "You've won. I won't tell anyone how you truly transplanted those organs, and you've already murdered your own friend to cover up the crime. I'm just asking for freedom."
Nika heard the crack of desperation in his voice, the fear leaking through. For a moment, Dr. Santo seemed to consider it, his finger slipping from the trigger. Nika wondered if it was out of cold calculation or understanding. Was there some part of his mask that was real? Some part that cared for Cochin, for the Kongmis, for even her? Then his resolve hardened, fingers tightening around the pistol,
and Yika remembered there were things he cared about more.
Tempting. But you shouldn't take me for a fool.
I'm not sure what you mean by that. Cochin's tone was steady.
Don't play coy. I knew something was amiss. Your visit to my house did not go unnoticed. I had to wonder what this was all about. But now that I see with the Kongmi's ward, it's clear enough.
He jabbed the pistol forward.
You, Swan Konyika, healed Hendon. He remembered Cochin, and Cochin revealed all. Did I miss anything?
Nika shouldn't have been surprised by Dr. Santo's guile. Even if he'd lied and murdered to secure his position, he had not become one of Thumas's meritocratic pillars through deception alone. She opened her mouth to rebut him, but Cochin spoke first.
I healed Hendon, Cochin said.
Nika flared her eyes at him, but his intention was clear. He was trying to save her, because the most dangerous thing to be before Dr. Santo was a heart soothe.
I went behind your back. I couldn't live with what you made me do, so I cured his brain injury. When you tried to drug him, I healed him again. Santo, let us go. Leaving more bodies in your wake won't help you.
Dr. Santo roared out a laugh.
Your bodies couldn't hurt. You think anyone will miss you, Cochin? You haven't spoken to your family in years. They probably already think you're dead. And you, Nika, you said it best yourself. You're nobody.
He's bluffing, Cochin, Nika said. He wouldn't hurt you. He needs his blood carver.
Clever girl, Dr. Santo drawled, tone devoid of true praise. But if Cochin is to be believed, and you did not heal Hendon, well, then,
he swiveled the gun to her.
That would make you expendable.
Beside her, Cochin tensed, and she heard him suck in a sharp breath. This was not the first time Nika had stood on the other side of a gun, but it was the first time she truly feared for her life.
Now, Nika, tell me the truth. Are you a blood carver?
Indecision held her tongue. Admit the truth, and she'd reap the full peril of Dr. Santo's attention. Worse, she feared he'd shoot Cochin, having no need for two heart soothes. Nika wondered if he already knew, if this was just a test, a cat playing with its prey. But say no and get shot where she stood. If he was a smart man, he'd aim for the head. Anywhere else, she might be able to heal it and give Cochin enough time to subdue him. A long shot, sure, but Nika drew all her courage into her lungs and said,
If I were a blood carver, you'd already be dead.
Let's test that then, shall we? Dr. Santo sneered, and Nika hardly had time to process the words before his finger went to the trigger. She sucked in a sharp breath, feeling the echo of the gunshot resonating in her chest as she numbed the pain receptors of her skin. Black eclipsed the flash of gunfire in the darkness, and Nika recoiled, waiting for the slice of metal through her heart. But it never came, and when she looked up, Cochin was standing before her, his back quivering and shoulders collapsed. It took her a long second to realize where the bullet had landed. Not in her chest, but his.
27.
No!
Nika's lungs emptied of air as she flew forward to catch Cochin. She lowered him in her arms beneath Dr. Santo's impassive gaze. Her breath stuttered at Cochin's pained grimace, hands following his in the dark as they sourced the bullet wound. Immediately, she felt the warmth of blood seep through her gloves, but he wouldn't be able to heal himself, not without an external energy source. She glared up at Dr. Santo, willing him to fear, to rue, but his eyes held only shrewdness. He cared not who he shot. He was merely assessing if his gambit would pay off, or if he'd lose his only blood carver.
Go on, he taunted. Heal him. You can, can't you?
Nika pulled her eyes down to Cochin, and he shook his head imperceptibly.
Don't, he whispered,
the words so quiet he might have just mouthed it.
You'll die, she said, her voice shaking with a sob.
The resignation in his eyes told her he knew that. Maybe he knew even before he took the bullet.
I don't care.
I do, she replied, shutting her eyes against the welling tears. Tugging off a glove, Nika bowed over his frame and cupped her fingers around the nape of his neck. There, she sowed her influence, feeling the immediate knife of pain in her lungs, a subdued reflection of his. She quieted that empathy, focusing instead on reconstruction, skin, lung, ribs. Before she could finish, the click of the gun drew her from her soothing, and when she opened her eyes, the barrel wavered just above her forehead.
Just as I thought, Dr. Santo huffed. A full Yerongese. I never figured I could trade up a troublesome half for a real blood carver. Aren't I lucky?
Let me finish healing him, Nika pleaded. Cochin's wound was spurting blood, and she could still hear the burble in his breath. Dr. Santo's expression curled into a cruel grimace.
Step away, Nika.
He'll die! Nika dredged her voice up from the back of her throat.
So, now you see what happens to those who cross me.
Cochin's chest shuddered with a pained breath.
Do as he says.
His request came out weak, and she only tightened her grip on him.
Listen to the boy, or I'll give you a different injury to heal,
Dr. Santo threatened.
You wouldn't kill both of us. You need a blood carver.
As an act of defiance, she craned her neck up to meet the barrel of the gun.
Oh, but you forget. I don't have to kill you.
With only that as warning, Dr. Santo lowered the gun to her shoulder and fired. The muzzle flashed in the dark. Nika had no time to numb her nerves before the bullet sliced cleanly through her frame, too close to her heart. She gasped for air, feeling the rise of blood in her throat and tasting metal on her tongue. Cochin let out a pained gasp as they fell apart.
Nika!
She crumpled backward, falling against the floor and smearing blood as she tried to grapple for balance. Dr. Santo had known exactly where to shoot her, to keep her alive, but incapacitated. Every alarm in her body hailed her at once, lungs screaming for air, chest pounding with its new puncture, muscles roiling in fiery pain. Black swarmed her vision, and she squeezed her eyes shut, turning her focus inward. Her influence waned with each throbbing heartbeat, but she rushed it toward the site of her wound, taking energy from her liver to restore the tissue, mend the bone, not the vessels. She left the wound unfinished, feeling too drained to sew her skin and resigned to letting it clot on its own. Her shoulder ached, her patched heart soothing rushed and sloppy. This was a wound that would scar. When the red cleared from her vision, Dr. Santo had tied Cochin to the radiator. His gun remained trained on Nika, finger ready on the trigger. Nika didn't doubt he would shoot her again, and again, and again, until he'd sapped every last ounce of her energy, until he'd bled her near death just to keep her on the precipice of life. A harrowing realization came to her, the recognition that Dr. Santo had studied those like her, had read of her limitations and weaknesses. He knew the rules of her heart soothing and used them against her. And for it, Cochin would die.
If you kill him, you'll have to kill me too, Nika spat.
I'll never work for you. You can't blackmail me, Santo. There's only one thing in this city I care about, and you've just shot him.
Dr. Santo stiffened, mulling over her words. She wondered how far he would go to control her. Would he use the siblings against her? The same ones he claimed to love so much? It was almost laughable. All his power lay in the deceit he wielded as a weapon, the gun he brandished as confidence. Beneath it all was just a lonely old man.
You're right, Dr. Santo said, and the words sowed more dread than triumph.
You know, from the moment I saw you, I always suspected you were a blood carver. I puzzled myself into corners trying to figure out what I needed to have you, and now I see. You care for Cochin.
Nika met Cochin's eyes,
finding his expression broken. His chest rose with uneven breaths, hands bound, but he didn't break eye contact.
"I've been looking for a blood carver for a long time. A true blood carver," Dr. Santo continued. "Someone who can do something Cochin was never able to."
She suddenly recalled the Dalton texts in his private study, their headlines, "Reincarner Ve Mortz," the pictures on Dr. Santo's desks, a boy taken from him too soon, the incessant search for heart soothes, for the limits of what medicine could do. They were starting to make sense. Mr. Kongmi didn't die because he threatened Dr. Santo's research projects. He died because he threatened something Dr. Santo cared about far more. The corpses, their organs, something Cochin was never able to do. Nika realized that Dr. Santo didn't ask Cochin to soothe dead bodies to keep their organs fresh for transplant. In fact, it was never about the transplants.
"You're trying to bring your son back,"
Nika whispered, and watched as Dr. Santo froze in surprise. In the silence, she continued,
"You've been searching for a heart soothe who can."
Her gaze flicked to Cochin, tied against the radiator, and she saw the same horrified realization creep into his eyes. She needed no other confirmation to know she was right. Something solemn flashed behind Dr. Santo's glasses. Nika recognized the same look from the wake. Losing someone slowly. Except, Dr. Santo didn't believe his son was truly lost, did he? In the next moment, Dr. Santo's lethal facade returned, and he said,
"How observant. Well, this is my proposition. You bring my son back, and I'll let you heal Cochin. The last thing I need a blood carver for, and the last thing you care about. Never let it be said that I'm not reasonable."
She shared a look with Cochin. They both knew she wouldn't be able to do it. There were limits to heart soothing, and bringing back the dead was not possible. But she saw no way out of this. Cochin's head moved, an imperceptible shake to tell her no. But she couldn't let him die. If anything, she at least had to buy them time.
"I'll do it," she said. "Now, let me heal Cochin."
"My son comes first," Dr. Santo said. "Put your gloves back on."
She didn't want to leave Cochin here, bleeding out through a half-sealed wound, but Nika needed to lower Dr. Santo's guard. She would not be able to save his son, even if it were possible. After healing her shoulder, her liver dwindled toward empty, and Nika feared that doing anything more might just kill her where the bullet hadn't. But she had few other options.
"Dr. Santo,"
Cochin rasped, finding his voice. He pulled forward against his restraints, glowering at him with an enmity that could cut steel.
"If you so much as lay a finger on her, I'll..."
"You'll what, Cochin?"
Dr. Santo dismissed with a flourish of his gun.
"If I were you, I'd save my energy. Now, Nika, are we doing this or not?"
"We are," she said, the dread settling deep into her bones as she pulled on her gloves. Anguish scrawled itself plainly in Cochin's expression, but she gave him a look that held both an apology and a promise.
"Take me to him."
28. Dr. Santo took her out of his office at gunpoint, then down the stairs. She'd walked this path before. He'd escorted her this way when she'd asked for literature, so she knew their destination to be his lab. Under the threat of a bullet, Nika numbed herself until she was little more than a walking corpse, body unfeeling as she ambled forward. Her shoulders still oozed, the blood soaking through her gloves and dripping in a steady trail behind them. But who would notice in a hospital? They reached the double doors of Dr. Santo's lab. Once the gilded gates of opportunity, they were now a hellmouth cast in poor lighting and dim moonlight. He pushed her through, and, as the doors swung shut behind her, Nika felt another ounce of her hope dwindle into dread. Her fear made mazes of the hallways and prison cells out of examination rooms, but in truth, Not much had changed since she'd last seen the space. That surgical automaton still sat behind an operating table, its claws now dormant. And there was the door to the library, where Dr. Santo had once offered her all the knowledge Thumis had to provide. Instead of those rooms, Dr. Santo took her to a windowless steel door. With the gun still trained on her, he unlocked it and heaved it open to a plain white room. Inside was a row of metal caskets that felt vaguely familiar to Nika, inset with machinery and wires and bellows. Three of them remained open, revealing a cushioned space inside, room enough for a single supine body. The last one, at the end of the row, was closed. Through the glass window, she saw a face that looked like sculpted porcelain. Dr. Santo forced her toward the last casket with a gun at her ribs and a gloved hand tight around her injured bicep. His thumb teased her wound. He only loosened his grip to open the casket, first unlatching a series of buckles, then releasing a seal that hissed with the discharge of pressurized air. The boy inside did not resemble the photos on Dr. Santo's desk. His muscle had all but wasted, leaving only a skeletal frame bound by taut, dry skin. Catheters extended from the casket into a variety of places in the body, powered by bellows to assume the role of circulation. This was not a boy anymore. It wasn't even a body. To abate her horror, Nika could only consider it an automaton, with a chassis made not of bronze, but bone, and functions overtaken by machine. Now more than ever, she prayed there was no afterlife, because Dr. Santo would have doomed his son to suffer in it. And he was either delusional or desperate if he thought she could possibly bring him back.
"Well," he said, prompting her with a twitch of his gun.
She stepped toward the casket, brow furrowed, and watched as the body pulsed with unnatural movement, lungs swelling with air and tubes bulging beneath the skin. A sharp pang of sorrow hit her. She remembered their conversations, the newspaper clippings, and saw how Dr. Santo's entire medical empire was founded not for Thumis's technocracy, but for a boy he hadn't been able to save. The irony was that she understood him, maybe better than anyone ever could. She understood him so well that she knew he would never stop trying. Because if she truly believed heart-soothing could have brought her family back, she wouldn't have either.
"His name was Leighton, right?" she said softly.
"It doesn't matter to you," Dr. Santo snapped.
Briefly, it seemed he would leave it at that. Then, in a grief-choked tone that reminded her of the Dr. Santo she thought she knew, he said,
"Yes, it was."
"So, all of this, the killing, the extortion, was for him?"
"Why do we do anything, Miss Swan, but for the ones we love?"
"What about Mimi and Andow, Trin, Mr. Kongmi? Did you not love them?"
"When you lose someone who means the entire world to you, then you'll understand. Not all of us can be so lucky to be born with the gift to bring them back."
Rage returned where she'd made room for remorse, and Nika wanted to tell him that she'd known that loss, more than he could imagine. The thing that divided them was that her losses drove her to heal others, whereas he'd let his consume him. It's what made her the true healer between them. Remembering Cochin and the wound in his chest, Nika saved her words. "I'm removing my gloves now," she said. Slowly, with her hands displayed before him, she drew off her gloves and let them fall to the floor with a wet splat of blood. Keeping him in the corner of her eye, she extended a hand toward the body. Nika didn't want to soothe him. She didn't even want to touch him. Now, with her hands bare, she considered making a try for Dr. Santo, for the thin line of space at his eyes, all the skin she could see on him, but he stood three bounds away. She would never be able to outpace the gun. Instead, she'd have to draw him closer. "Act as though they're alive," Cochin had told her. Nika let out a breath and prepared herself to soothe. As soon as her influence entered him, Nika nearly vomited. It was an amalgamation of unnaturalness, all the strange fluids in him, the wires snaking underneath his skin, the decay he'd gone through. The very thought of altering anything here repulsed her. She kept the body at a distance, soothing the way Cochin did, the way she had at the exhumation. She oriented this boy before her, the rest of the room falling away. White walls folded and collapsed into emptiness. The floor sank into abyssal darkness, one tile at a time, and the ceiling peeled back to reveal a vast blankness above. It was just Nika and this body. The sounds of the casket dulled to silence, and even Dr. Santo's gun felt far, far away. In this moment, Nika knew only three things. The first was that she could never resurrect this corpse, no matter how hard she tried, because she hadn't the knowledge, and this corpse resembled a human only in form. The second was that the candle of her energy had dwindled to a stub, and healing anything more might just cost her life. If she had to spend it, she would spend it wisely. And third, most important of all, was that Dr. Santo had torn apart the city for this one singular child. Nika knew Dr. Santo wouldn't let her go, even if she could revive the dead. And if she couldn't, he'd look for someone who could. So long as he believed there was a chance to bring his son back, he'd hunt for the heart-soothe to do it. Keeping Cochin had never been about the research, the organs, not even the heart-soothing. It had been about this body. It always had. So Nika would destroy it. Her influence mired itself with the corpse. Wherever it touched, organs burst and bled, skin bruised, bones embrittled. The corpse came apart under her touch, raised past the threshold of repair, heart-soothe or otherwise. "What are you doing?" Dr. Santo roared, ripping her away from the body. But the damage had already been done. Flesh bloomed green and purple with decayed blood, and wires tore loose from papery skin. Dr. Santo howled as he saw the damage, then spun back to face her. Nika flew forward at the opportunity, her fingers finding a hold against his face. Her influence invaded him. It raced to his liver, prepared to steal his stores to replenish her own. She'd only managed to catch a mote before pain erupted across her scalp. Not mirrored, but her own. Her influence broke immediately, her soothing a dazed kaleidoscope of color and feeling as she tumbled through anatomy, unable to grab hold of anything solid. When her senses returned, she found herself on the floor with rivulets of blood messing the side of her face and a swollen lump on her temple where he'd bludgeoned her. The barrel of the gun pressed against her rib cage once more, and Dr. Santo wrenched her arms behind her back with a strength unbefitting his body. "You'll regret this," he promised, lifting her from the ground and dragging her to one of the metal caskets. Her feet tangled themselves as she fought to escape his grip, but he'd already heaved the casket open with his shoulder. "In," he ordered, and Nika realized this was a fate worse than death, being forgotten alive in this contraption. He jerked the gun with impatience. "I won't ask again." Fearing the bullet, she lifted herself in, and he slammed the lid atop her. The glass window fogged with her breath, but she could still see his visage looming on the other side, glasses speckled with her blood. "What are you going to do?" she asked, no longer able to hide the fear in her voice. "If you won't heal him, I'll have to do it myself," Dr. Santo said, his voice muffled through iron. "I need only test a myth, whether the heart of a blood carver can confer the gift after all." "Mother," he was going to slice her open, take her heart. Nika screamed, only succeeding in fogging the glass further. But instead of moving toward her, Dr. Santo latched up her coffin and left the room. Realization was slow to dawn, but when it did, it dragged in horror behind it. Dr. Santo wasn't going to take her heart, He was going to take Cochin's.
29. This was what it felt like to be buried alive. Eaten by the abyss, and choking on recycled air, Nika screamed until her lungs grew hoarse. She banged her fists, kicked her feet, rattled the metal coffin until even the mother must have heard her. She prayed for company in this medical center, a late-night janitor, a passing physician, or even Dr. Santo, so that she might carve his eyes out of his head. He planned to cut out Cochin's heart. Nika wondered if she would be next, or if she would play as Dr. Santo's new aide, a blood carver pet to kill and heal at his behest. It hardly mattered. In the moment, it wasn't her life she feared for.
"Somebody, please!"
she cried, using the limited mobility of her arms and legs to rattle the lid. She turned on her side, heaving her shoulder against the top. But the latches held, her muscles tired, and Nika hadn't even strained the metal. With few options left, Nika beat her palms against the top of the casket, screaming till her lungs ran raw. The screams eventually subsided to whimpers, and then to a choking sob. She could hardly breathe. Nika couldn't tell if it was the claustrophobia, the panic, or the thought of Cochin on the operating table. Maybe she would die here in the casket, suffocated. What's worse, she might not be in time to save him. Why? Her arms fell at her sides, joints aching and muscles raw. Why was it that the world insisted she be alone? She thought her fate changed when she'd met Cochin, but had that been a cruel tease? Her tears came undammed. There was no shame in them, because she was alone here. Because if no one would remember Cochin, then at least she could weep for him. Nika shrank into herself, wishing the dimensions of the casket would allow her to curl into a ball. For all her heart-soothing, for all the years she'd spent evading death, this seemed an awful lot like fate. It was an intimate form of cruelty. She'd wished for death so many times before, and the mother had only waited until the moment she needed to live. An aseptic chill settled in. She felt like a corpse, unfeeling and languid in the coffin. The only warmth came from her tears, welling in the corners of her eyes. But even those turned frigid as they traveled down her cheeks. Colors danced in the darkness, ears ringing in the silence. And Nika squeezed her eyes closed to quell it all, the rising panic and mounting grief. If Cochin died, it would be her fault. She'd flown him into a thunderstorm on paper wings, quelling his anxieties with whispered assurances. He thought he'd pulled her into his tempest, when in reality, she'd pulled him into hers. Because no one who'd ever touched her, loved her, cared for her at all, had made it out of her life alive. A voice. Nika's eyes snapped open, and she blinked away the lingering tears. She trained her ears, but nothing more came. Had it been the ringing of the silence? But then,
"The blood stops here, Trin."
"Mimi." Hope reinvigorated her sore body, and she slammed her palms against the cabinet.
"Mimi! I'm here! I'm here!"
More voices, lights, and then a fogged face appeared on the other side of the glass. It was Mimi, unlatching the lid and pushing it open with all her weight. Cold, sanitized air filled her lungs as Nika rolled out of the coffin, eyes streaked with tears, but never so happy to see the two of them. Trin's eyes bugged at the amount of blood covering her, his lips twisted in discomfort. Her eyes found the pistol at his belt. Good. They'd need it.
"What happened?" Mimi asked. "We heard the gunshots, and heavens, Nika, did he shoot you?"
"I'm all right," she said, though her shoulder and skull throbbed with every heartbeat. "Cochin's in the office. He's going to die without my help." She was already headed toward the door when Mimi caught her wrist.
"He's not there. We checked. There's nothing there but blood."
Nika halted, horror coming like a slow dawn. If Dr. Santo had already moved him, that meant,
"The operating rooms. Where are the operating rooms?"
Trin jerked his head down the hall. Follow me.
They rushed through empty halls, toward the section of Dr. Santo's lab that housed his operating suites. Nika cared little about who might find her now. Let them see her bloodied robe, her gritty determination, her culminating wrath. Let them try to stop her. They turned the corner, and Nika knew this dark, ghostly corridor to be the surgical ward. There, at the far end, was a light. Trin, is your pistol loaded? He nodded. Call him out at gunpoint. Distract him, and I'll soothe him. Now soothe seemed too kind a word. No, she wanted to rend him piece from piece, grind his bones to dust, and ignite every nerve in his body. After she finished carving, not even vultures would recognize him as carrion. As they approached, she could hear the grind of a bone saw, smell the burnt tang of its dust. Disgust rose in her throat, and she swallowed the sour bile, focusing instead on the shadows playing in the light. Dr. Santo's shadow splayed across the far wall, stretched and monstrous, but she couldn't see Cochin. Nika sucked in a breath, dipping into the cover of the adjacent room and concealing herself behind a wall. She waited for Trin, who drew his pistol and aimed it down the hallway. His voice echoed in the emptiness of the surgical ward as he called out, Dr. Santo! Show yourself! The shadow stilled, then shrank. Their edges crystallized, and Dr. Santo's silhouette took shape as he approached the threshold of the operating room, until Nika could see him blocking the entrance. Her breath hitched with anticipation, fingers aching for vengeance. She thirsted to curl them around his neck, to choke him from the inside out. And she would. Dr. Santo stepped into the hall, garbed in a bloodied brown apron with a pistol in hand. At the sight of Trin, he raised his aim until they'd locked each other. Nika coaxed him closer with a prayer, waiting for him to draw within her range. But he remained fixed in his spot, looking calmer behind the barrel than a doctor should have.
So, the secret's out, isn't it? He muttered, voice muffled by a surgical mask.
Dr. Santo! Mimi snarled, fierce for her position behind gunpoint. A part of me wanted to believe you, up until the very end. I couldn't fathom that you could help us plan our funeral and find our murderer when it was you, all along, the man we were looking for. How could you do that to us?
Leave, he warned, his voice holding genuine concern. For Mimi or for his crime, Nika wasn't sure. You have no idea what's at stake.
If it was all a lie, all that you've done for us, then tell me at least one truth, Mimi said. Why did you kill my father?
Arm outstretched, pistol unwavering, Dr. Santo said. Because he didn't know when to look the other way for the sake of a friend. And neither, it seems, do his children.
Taking that as her cue, Nika leaped from the curtains and diverted Dr. Santo's wrist. A bullet fired into the ceiling, and then she was grappling for the gun, hands slipping against his gloves, slick with blood, and palms struggling to find skin underneath his layers. He threw his arm out in an arc, and pain bloomed across her chest. The surgical light was enough to catch the shine of the surgeon's knife in his hand, and Nika numbed those receptors, leaving nothing but a lingering warmth on her skin and tightness in her chest. He drove forward with the scalpel, and she caught his arm. They were stuck in a lock, Nika's hands shaking as one pinned Dr. Santo's gun and the other his scalpel. The knife drew closer to her gut. Her fingers tightened against slipping rubber. Nika gritted her teeth as she glared at him, finding the only exposed strip of skin on him to be his face above the surgical mask. Her grip loosened on his pistol hand, and she felt him angling his wrist. The barrel curved toward her, dangerously close, and Nika drew in a sharp breath at the expectation of a bullet. Nika! Trin called, and she turned her head just in time to see the flash of his barrel. Trin, who had wielded that pistol so many times as a threat, but never before pulled the trigger, did so now.
and it was a beautiful shot, passing her as it entered Dr. Santo's leg and escaped cleanly out the other side. Trin did not miss. With an outraged cry, Dr. Santo collapsed, clutching his thigh. Viper fast, Nika's hand shot out and latched itself onto his face. Skin. With it, her influence exploded across his body. The dim lights of the medical center fell away. A world turned inside out as she carved. Nika wrested control of his hands, squeezing extensor muscles until both the scalpel and the gun fell from his grip. Something within him fought her for control. Not an influence, but the absoluteness of his will. And Nika had never felt so much a trespasser in a body than now, when the body fought her back. But she forged forward, teeth gritted, fingers curled, brow set. For Cochin, and the Kongmis, and for herself. Because Dr. Santo had raised and killed and defiled just to control a blood carver, so she would show him what it meant to truly have one. Dr. Santo's will broke like shattered glass, and she fell into the full dominion of his anatomy. Her influence tumbled forward into his chest, the hollow of his ribcage, finding his heart locked between two lungs. Its muscle pulsed with vigor, and all she had to do to kill him was reach up to that line of influence, the one that diffused electricity around the heart, and disrupt it. Nika extended her influence, curled it around his heart, and paused. Here, suspended in his thoracic cavity, Nika could almost forget who it was she carved. His heart beat the same as any other, its cadence suddenly so fragile and mortal. And Nika remembered when she'd last been in this position, with Cochin, a knife in his side and a hand around his neck, before she ever knew what he was. Back then, he'd fought against her, not so he might live, but so she wouldn't have to defile her gift by taking a life. Nika would not let Dr. Santo, in his last act of life, defile her gift now. She drew back from his body and into her own. As if she'd taken all his energy stores, Dr. Santo slumped to the ground, legs still bleeding, as Trin arrived to apprehend him. Nika, you're hurt! Mimi fretted, wide-eyed, as she stared at Nika's stomach. With a shake of her head, Nika dismissed her concern. Find a telephone, call the constabulary, get Dr. Santo out of here, she managed, squeezing a hand over her abdomen and finding it warm with blood. Come with us! You need to see a doctor! Nika shook her head. Not now. She turned to leave, but Mimi caught her sleeve. Please, Nika! You're hurt! Nika paused, feeling the pain prickle under her skin, muted. She looked at Mimi and Trin, at Dr. Santo between them. No more lies, no more weapons, just a doctor whose will she had broken. If she left with them now, the terror of this night could end. But she only shook her head. Leave, Mimi. Find your justice. Nika needed to find Cochin. With looks of acceptance, Mimi and Trin pulled Dr. Santo away while Nika ambled toward the operating room. There was little pain, but her body still reminded her it was dying. She left the wounds as they were, her pounding skull and bleeding abdomen. Nika lacked the energy to heal herself now. Her throat closed when she saw Cochin. Dr. Santo had strapped him to the operating table, pinned by leather restraints. The operation had already begun, and tears burned at the thought of being too late. He stirred when she neared, giving his first sign of life. A slow blink, wide eyes trembling with subdued panic, and then an anguished smile. There he was, shirt torn open and chest bloody, and he was smiling. She wept, her emotions a disorderly mess of fear and relief and panic and urgency. He was here. She'd come in time. But his wounds were deep, and her energy was petering out. And for all the lives she'd saved before, she might not be able to save this one. Nika, His hand lifted, but fell again once it met the resistance of the restraints.
"You're alive," she breathed, then rushed to him, unbuckling straps and joining him on the table, where she pulled him into her arms. Her hands were wet with blood, either his or hers, and she saw the raw damage of the gunshot, still leaking blood into his open chest.
"It's okay. I don't feel a thing," he said. Why did he say that as if they were his last words? Tears blurred her vision as she placed a hand against his chest.
"I can heal this," she said, palm plastered over the wound.
Arm trembling, he lifted his hand to her cheek and thumbed away a tear. She caught his hand, holding it there, just to feel that warmth a final time.
"This isn't your fault," he said,
just a whisper, as though he were already fading away. But it was her fault. She was too late. There was too much to heal, too little energy. She herself was dying, though her body knew better than to remind her now. Everything she touched died. Whenever she got involved, she lost it all. But Cochin was hope after a flame snuffed out. She wouldn't survive healing him, but she wasn't sure she would survive losing him either. As she bowed her head, something slipped out from underneath her shirt. It was her bone ring, yanking at the end of its string and catching the glare of the surgical lights. Through the fog of her fatigue, she saw the bone shards aligned along the band, the crack that threaded through them. She saw the space left for her grandmother, for herself, for the heart suits after them. She saw the three characters etched on the inside, Suanyasan, a name that yearned to be remembered. And she realized, suddenly, and with perfect clarity, what she had to do. Her forebears had passed heart-soothing on to her grandmother. Her grandmother had passed it on to her. Now she would pass it on to Cochin, the only person who would know what it meant, what it was worth. Let him have her heart-soothing, which had saved Hendon, which had defeated Dr. Santo, in all its forms, with all its wonders, which she'd been granted for a singular purpose: to heal. In her final act of heart-soothing, that was exactly what she would do.
"Cochin," she exhaled. "I love you."
She knew he wouldn't accept what she was about to do, so she distracted him the only way she knew how. Nika bent over and kissed him. With the finality of someone accepting his end, Cochin rose to meet her. As their lips met, as she flattened her palm against his wound, heat burst forth from her abdomen like a star born within her. She funneled that heat into him, at the juncture of their lips and her palm, a flood of life wherever their skin touched. Her influence seeped into him like sunlight, smoothing his fractured ribs, stitching up burst vessels, making his lungs whole again. His eyes flared when he understood what she was doing. Cochin pulled away from the kiss, his breath sharp, but she kept her palm planted against his chest. From that contact, she seeded growth, drawing from her muscles to sew up his skin.
"Nika, no!"
he gasped, finding voice in his lungs again. Renewed, he sat up, pulling her into his arms and wincing at the motion.
"Stop!"
But she wasn't done. She'd sealed his body back together, but Dr. Santo had made a mess of his core, lungs askew, and organs bruised. Pain flared up in Nika's own anatomy as her hold on herself slipped. Her abdomen flashed in agony where Dr. Santo had opened it, the injury loud after she'd silenced it for so long. She ignored the burning that spread up her legs, starved of their energy, ignored how her vision swarmed with spots, shadows over her retinas, ignored the dryness of her tongue, thirsting for water. Nika fell into his arms, limbs losing strength. She felt her heartbeat in her neck, her chest pounding as though preparing to burst. But she kept soothing, even as she felt Cochin rise to fight her. Their influences warred, entangled and inseparable, until at last hers won out.
"Don't fight, Kojin," she whispered,
but he only shook his head.
"Your heart's soothing. It's yours again, to be whatever it is you want it to be."
That, she realized, was her legacy. A gift to the ones after, the ones she cared for. Nika laid herself into his bones, his muscles, his heart. Soon, there was nothing left to her that wasn't Cochin's as well. Nothing but an empty vessel and a withered liver. He gathered her close, and, through the blurriness of her vision, she saw that he was crying.
"There,"
she said at last, her voice a rasp.
"Now you'll have it all. Peace. Freedom."
Nika lost the energy to complete the sentence.
"Please, don't leave me,"
he begged, anguish cracking his words. He wrapped her hand in his, brought her knuckles to his lips, planted a kiss. She couldn't stay, but that didn't mean she was leaving him. Nika had never known what to do with her damned empathy organ, figuring it'd be the death of her. Well, if that was to be the case, then Cochin could have it. He could have it all. Her wretched little heart. Her vision blackened. Wakefulness tapered. Pain bloomed. With the last of her waning strength, she moved Cochin's hand to the ring around her neck, curled his fingers around it. In his embrace, her world melted away at the edges, and her breathing slowed. But Nika only smiled. Because she'd found it, at long last, the place where she belonged. Epilogue. So went the story of the mother and the trickster fox. There came a fox who'd observed the mother's sacred gift and decided to attempt it for himself. Without the mother to teach him, his heart-soothing manifested not as healing, but as shape-shifting, a tool he used to walk among humans as one of their own. When the mother learned of how he had profaned her gift, using it not to heal, but to beguile, she grew incensed. As his punishment, she carved away the thing he cared for the most, his ninefold tail, the plumage that set him apart from all the other beasts, and cursed him to forever flee from humans. But Cochin had never seen the fox as a villain. He saw the fox as one who could not use the mother's gift as others could, so he had to find his own way. Therefore, his punishment was never a victory to Cochin, but a warning from a goddess he didn't believe in. Perhaps he should have listened. If he had, maybe he wouldn't be standing here before Nika's tombstone, living on in her stead. Her last words replayed in his mind in an agonizing melody. Peace. Freedom. Now he carried her as a part of himself, carried her youth in each stride, and her laughter on every breath. Nika was there in the bone ring around his finger, in the scar that split his chest from sternal notch to solar plexus. If he focused, he could even imagine her warmth beside him, both of them surveying her empty grave. "A granite headstone?" she would have said. "I thought I'd be worth marble at least." "Well, the venue is nice," he reasoned, sweeping a gaze around the empty graveyard. It was the Kongmi family's own cemetery, where the siblings had gotten her an honorary headstone, though her details were few. Swan Ko Nika, in all capitals, engraved with the image of an anatomical heart. They had never consulted him about the familial name, had never thought to ask if she truly had one. But the grave was only ceremonial. No body lay beneath the dirt. A throat cleared behind him, and he turned. The image of Nika dashed. It was Andao, Mimi, and Trin, all in black attire. Mimi held a bountiful bouquet in her arms, chrysanthemums blooming white and yellow.
"I'm sorry," Mimi said, diverting her eyes toward the ground. "We came to pay respects. We didn't realize..."
"It's all right," Cochin said, making space for them. He stood to the side as they left the bouquet atop her headstone. Mimi placed her palms together, murmuring a quiet prayer. To whom? Cochin wondered, when Theumans worshipped no god. They whispered their respects, too quiet for Cochin to hear, before straightening. He watched them out of the corner of his eye, his expression neutral. We owe a lot to her, Mimi said, and Cochin took a moment to realize he was being addressed. He nodded.
Me too.
Peace. Freedom. We came to tell her the good news, she continued, her voice edging on hope. Dr. Santo was sentenced this morning. For life. Cochin nodded once.
So, he's finally seen justice for his crimes.
Except, not all of them. Theumas would never know all that Cochin had lost that night. You had plans with her, right? Mimi asked. The words were innocent, but they drove a knife through his heart.
Yes, he responded curtly.
I'm sorry, Mimi said again, as if she knew nothing else to say. Now that she's gone, will you stay in the city? He sensed the true question behind her words.
I'll leave your lives, he assured her.
And then? Peace. Freedom. He'd lost Nika, but she wasn't gone. In all of heart-soothing, there were known taboos. He'd already broken many of them, using his art to injure and disable. But there was one he had yet to attempt, one that not even Dr. Santo had been able to achieve. Bringing back the dead. Most would tell him it was impossible, that even heart-soothing couldn't breathe life into something that had gone. But all taboos had pretense. He'd learn how to do it, even if he had to search every corner of the city for the answer, even if he had to raise Theumas down to its roots.
What will you do? Mimi asked, drawing him back to the cemetery.
I'm going home, he said. But that was only half the truth.
Cochin stared at the empty grave, his fist tightening with resolve. The granite headstone teased him, the false name an omen. Because she wasn't really gone, was she? With heart-soothing, she'd given him her life. And with heart-soothing, he was going to bring her back.
We hope you've enjoyed this production of The Last Blood Carver, written by Vanessa Lay, read by Vivi Nguyen, a Macmillan audio production for Roaring Brook Press. This title was produced by Steve Wagner. Text copyright 2024 by Vanessa Lay. Production copyright 2024 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved. For more information about Macmillan audiobooks, please visit macmillanaudio.com.